This is the Reggie's House Podcast. I am, of course, Andrew Roman, and I'm joined, as usual, by Mike Swanson. Mike, I got a question for you.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
Why does the NHL and its teams always have to take things from us?
If I had to guess, it's because Gary Bettman is the commissioner, and he is a greedy man that looks like a villain from a Home Alone movie.
That is actually a very good answer. I am, in this instance, speaking about General Fanager, a site that I think we've referenced every episode so far.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah. You know, on one hand, I'm really stoked for the owner of the site, Tom Perasik. He gets to go work for the new Las Vegas franchise.
Can we just talk for a second about the fact that it's quickly becoming that the most savvy teams in the NHL are all located in the most barren wasteland of the United States?
Yes. Not only like barren, but least likely to actually be able to sustain a hockey team due to natural habitation and so on.
Right. Right. I mean, other than the fact that George McPhee is the GM of that team, I think it's still going to be a really good club.
Yeah, no, certainly, you know, I think we've seen, at least before General Fanager went down, we saw what, you know, it could look like for a team in Vegas, like some of the players that were going to be exposed and what that sort of meant for their lineup. And, you know, so long as McPhee takes it seriously, and obviously I think, you know, making a decision to hire a guy like Tom certainly suggests that, you know, he's in it to win it. So he knows kind of who he wants.
Yeah. Well, do you make anything of the fact that he's not hired as an AGM, but as some assistant scout of talent or analytics or some other BS title that he was given?
Well, and to me, that's maybe the only thing that kind of makes that decision a little bit odd is, like, if you're going to go out, like, I mean, I think there's a certain case to be made about, like, the guys that have had some of the, stat sites that have gone by the wayside, like the guys from War on Ice and Extra Skater and so on. Like, there's something to be said for, you know, those guys had a unique view on things that could not be replicated, and the teams that hired them wanted that to be taken away from the marketplace.
Right.
But I feel like with a situation like this, I mean, you know, General Fanager is amazing, but I also feel like it's more replicable than being, you know, a PhD in stats.
Right, yeah. That's totally fair. I mean, and I'm assuming you're referencing the guy that the Pens hired, two seasons ago.
Yeah, Sam Ventura.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed because you've got, you don't really have anything out there. Like, I mean, I'm bummed. I'm still bummed that War on Ice is not a thing. Yeah. Because like, that site was freaking awesome.
Yes.
I'm bummed that that's not a thing. And now I'm bummed that General Fanager isn't a thing. I don't know, like, because Tom Peraza just seemed like, by all accounts, a really good dude. Like, forget about the fact that he, you know, maintained one of the most helpful tools to the internet blogging community, like, in the NHL. But he just seemed like a good dude. And so, like, on the one hand, I'm really excited for him that he's not just doing something from the sideline now, but he's actually going in and jumping in with like a group that he, you know, he has an opportunity to really put a stamp on the league in a very active way. But at the same time, like, I just wanted to run General Fanager. Like, like, I really like that site. Yeah. It was helpful. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, once again, it's like I wish him all the best, but it is, you know, but it, literally it's like, if you are a hockey fan, it's so hard to become kind of too focused and too excited about one website, because chances are good that just as you like really come to love it and like can't live without it, it will be taken from you.
Yeah, just rest in peace, General Fanager. Like, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So yeah. Moving on to other arguably more relevant news.
True.
There is real hockey being played.
Praise the Lord. Let me just say that. Yeah. It has been something that I've personally been looking forward to, obviously, for, 4 months since June, since the Pens won the Cup. And I'll be honest with you, like, this group of games did not disappoint the last, looking at the first four games of the season.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the, like, contest scores were, I think in these four games, you've seen every issue that, or every storyline that has played out for the Pens this summer has come to bear in these first four games.
Yeah, truly. I mean, it's you know, these games have not been short on storylines, which I guess is, I mean, it could be good or it could be bad. I think the first two games were certainly very good storylines, and
yeah,
unfortunately, the latter two games have been slightly less good. But, I think we're seeing some confirmation of certain things that we maybe talked about or that we kind of expected to happen over the course of the summer. I look at what Scott Wilson's been up to, and I think he's had a little bit of a shaky or uncomfortable start, but I actually thought he was one of the only good Penguins in the Montreal game.
That wasn't hard to do, let's be honest.
Well, no, not at all.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I mean, Scott Wilson has very much had an up-and-down season so far. I think he looked not great against Washington and Anaheim.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that he was terrible, but he did not look like the preseason Scott Wilson that we saw in those six games.
Yeah, that's very true. I think the last couple games, I think he's looked a little bit more confident. The thing that encouraged me the most in the Montreal game is that he finally started just shooting the puck.
Yeah.
I think in those first couple games, he was just like, he kind of lost that killer instinct that mm-hmm. makes him such an intriguing prospect. And he just constantly wanted to defer to Malkin and in some cases like Chris Kunitz or whoever else he was playing with.
Understandable. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's an understandable thing when you're playing against, you're playing with guys like Chris Kunitz, who has, whether he deserved it or not, has an Olympic gold medal in a couple of Stanley Cups, and Evgeny Malkin is a, Art Ross winner, just a beast of a human being. It's hard. I can't say that I would do anything different if I'm Scott Wilson at 23 and playing on a line with Kunitz and Malkin,
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think on the other side of things, perhaps the guys who haven't been trending in a good direction, I feel like these first four games have not been kind to Olimata.
No, they haven't. I feel bad for him because he didn't, I didn't see this in the preseason. I didn't see him have at least this bad of a set of games. But I think I was listening to Sullivan talk about what he had seen from Mata over these first couple games. I think this was right after the Colorado game. And it's not, last year the complaint was his skating. His skating got him in trouble, and it was the thing that he just got burnt to the outside time and time again.
Very true.
And I haven't seen the skating been weak. I have not seen the skating be as weak. What I have seen be weaker is his decision making. Yeah. And I think, he's gotten caught in the offensive zone pinching up in times that he shouldn't, but also just in that kind of critical turn for a defenseman as he's backing into the blue line. He's either turning way too early or way too late. And, you saw that happen on the, I think it was the first Max Pacioretty goal in Montreal. He just got beat to the, I don't know if it was the Pacioretty goal, one of the goals. He just got beat to the outside and turned too early and then just got beat down the line,
I completely agree with all of that. I think honestly I don't think his skating has looked, I think it has maybe looked a touch better than a lot of what we saw last year, which is a good thing. But then I think it was Jesse Marshall who just, like, his characterization was, right now Mata is displaying the decision-making aptitude when he has the puck and he's looking to clear the zone of Rob Scuderi.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can really dish out any kind of worse criticism.
Well, it's true. I mean, I had seen him Like, I mean, by the end of the game, he was playing, he was alternating between Cole and Schultz in Montreal. And, I mean, to be fair, it was not the best showing for the Pens, you know, team-wide.
Yeah, but, in any facet of anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Brian Dumoulin was a minus three. Like, let's just put that in comparison. Yeah. But to be fair, you know, Mata was not, he did not have a great game against Montreal. And I think, you know, I think it's one of those, like, if I had to pin it down as to what's going on, I think the skating has gotten better. And because he's played for such a long time, not being able to rely on that, like the smoothness and the transition that we saw in his rookie season, I think it's taken him a little while just to kind of get back into it. And he's got to recalibrate the rest of the senses on that. And I think it's just going to take him time. Like in the same, like what he, what Sullivan was saying about the, you know, Mata and Daly pairing is give it a few games. Like, you know, one or a couple bad games is not going to undo, like, what, you know, we know is possible from that pairing. And so I, as much as I don't want to say like, oh, it's just give it time, they'll figure it out. I mean, the real reality is like those guys need time. Like this is, that was the fourth game of the season, you know? It's okay that they haven't figured everything out right off the bat. If Mata continues to be as bad as he has been, I think then we start having concern, you know, 10 games in, 15 games in. But this was the fourth game of the season, and him skating with, you know, not Team Finland, in the very, like, let's you know, he didn't have a bad World Cup, but no. Team Finland and Team Pittsburgh Penguins do not play remotely the same style of hockey.
No.
And so I think whatever, like, whatever that skating kind of did, like, whatever kind of lapses in judgment or, you know, course corrections he would have to make, you wouldn't have to do that with Team Finland just because they're not as fleet-footed of a style as the Pens are going to play.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, very eloquently stated, is that, you know, the demands of playing for the Penguins and playing with a guy like Trevor Daly is so different than the situation that he was, that Mata was in. And, you know, I mean, I guess I'll say this. If it would be beneficial, you know, I wouldn't even mind seeing Mata maybe just play more in that third pairing role, you know, playing with Schultz, or, you know, depending on, like, if Chris Letang is going to end up missing a lot of time here or something like that, maybe he even ends up, you know, they kind of shuffle things around and he ends up playing with Derek Pouliot or something like
that.
And, you know, I think if you just, if you want to just maybe limit his minutes, give him closer to, you know, somewhere in the 10 to 14 minute range instead of asking him to go out and play 18 to 22 every night, that's, you know, I'm all for it. You know, I think the decision making is so uncharacteristic that I believe it's going to fix itself. But
yeah.
But I think that the way that you do that is to take away a little bit of that pressure and responsibility.
Well, and that's, I mean, we've seen him respond twice now from like some pretty significant adversity. I mean, first, in just the fact that he made the Pens roster out of camp in his rookie season, like that's, right. You know, that's he made a roster. Was Paul Martin still on the team at that point?
Oh yeah.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So like, if he's gonna play, you know, copycat Paul Martin, like that's a big deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, like, to put it back into context, like that was when the Penguins still had, so you had Paul Martin and obviously Chris Letang. And you also still had Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen on the team at that time too.
Right.
And Mata was able to crack that lineup. So
yeah. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant adversity thing. And then him coming back from the shoulder injury, cancer, mumps, everything, the year from hell, like to come back from that. But also like even just like for him to be scratched in the playoffs last year and to respond in the second half of the Tampa series, and then to come down and play some really solid minutes against San Jose. Like, the kid has resolve. He's got the moxie to continue to do it. And I think Sullivan and the bench bosses for the Penguins will realize that, like, because they've seen him do it. And so am I excited if I'm Mike Sullivan that Mata turned in another egg in Montreal? No, I'm not excited. I mean, I know that Sullivan was absolutely livid with the entirety of the team after that loss, but you know what? Like, if we're still seeing this in 15 games, the 15 game mark, then maybe we start panicking. But I'm not worried about Olli Mata at this point. It's gonna, like, I think it's gonna turn the ship around, and I think it'll be all right, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, here's hoping. You know, he's certainly a guy that I think, you know, clearly we both like a lot. So, and once again, he has shown that resolve and that ability to bounce back. I think it's, you know, just got to give him that opportunity.
Yeah. So what are your just general thoughts? Because I don't want to go through here and talk about each of the four games that we've had since the last podcast, but general thoughts, some trends that you're picking up on from the first four games of the season.
Well, I think the biggest thing by far is just the complete lack of discipline that the Pens have shown so far. I mean, I think even going back to the Anaheim game, they had a couple of 5-on-3 situations. They were able to kill off one, but they did allow a goal on another one. They allowed a goal to Colorado in that situation. And, I mean, just the Montreal game. They had 8 power plays credited to them, but I feel like they spent about 3.5 minutes actually on the power play, which is just inexcusable because the rest of the time they were either playing 4-on-4 or they just nullified it by even going down into like 4-on-3 and 3-on-3 situations. So it was not good.
That's true. Give me 1 second. My roommate just walked through my office and left the door cracked open. So can you stall for 4 seconds while I close this door?
Yeah.
Okay.
So among other things that have been perhaps entertaining to me is just been watching Phil Kessel. We'll get back into this. I don't even know if Mike's actually listening to this.
Oh, I'm listening. Well, when I said 4 seconds, I wasn't even kidding.
No, that was pretty close.
But, yeah, man, I told you.
But I was just
Phil
saying.
Phil Kessel is the man. Like, yes. Listen, first of all, the video that came out of him on Media Day was the most adorable thing in the world. Phil Kessel is fantastic.
Him and his hair.
Dude, oh, Lord have mercy. What I didn't realize about Phil is you think back to that interview that he did with Pierre, the Bad Breath interview, right?
Yeah.
Which, for the record, I've watched several times since that happened, and it continues to be the best interview that Pierre Maguire has ever done.
Yeah, I think it was the most hard-hitting questions he's ever asked.
It's relevancy, right? Yeah. But what I didn't realize is that moment when Phil like realizes that he thinks that Pierre is asking him a question or telling him that his breath is really bad. And then he does the look away and chuckle. I thought that was a one-off for Phil Kessel. Oh, as no. It turns out, that's how Phil Kessel lives his life. It's just a series of shoegaze moments where he is deeply embarrassed and can't do anything about it.
I just want to meet him once.
I do.
Feel like we'd be best of friends.
It's true. If there's anybody that's listening to this that can get me to meet Phil Kessel and we can maybe go play some like 17, like NHL 17, or you know what? I don't care. I'll watch Phil Kessel play FIFA, whatever. We'll get a bottle of Pib and some red vines and just go to town. Like, I just want to hang out with Phil Kessel and just have him talk about stuff. Like, yes. Just Phil, just talk. Pretend I'm not even here.
Yeah. Just tell me about you, Phil. Like, what do you like in life?
Well, we know that he likes to go to the movies, he likes his dog, and he likes to play video games. Like, that's what Phil Kessel likes.
Yeah. Well, I guess that sums it up.
Well, which is fine. I can get down with most of those things.
Yes.
Movie prices are just outrageous. And I guess if you're Phil Kessel making $8 million a year, you can do whatever you want. But,
yeah.
Phil, did I tell you that I almost impulse bought a Phil Kessel jersey the other day?
No, but I wish you had.
So do I. I found one on sale for like $40 and I almost pulled the trigger, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And then this video came out with Phil and I couldn't handle it. I just couldn't.
Yeah. Like Emily, my wife, was like telling me about it a little bit and like she was kind of starting to describe it, but I was just like, I don't get what you're saying. And then like during the Montreal game, they played that clip and I was like, I literally was like, bent over like howling with laughter.
How did Toronto run him out of the locker room? Like he reminds me of a less vulgar version of that movie where Mark Wahlberg spends time with an animated teddy bear. Like, he is the teddy bear in that movie, but just less vulgar.
Yeah. Oh, with just that Midwestern charm and aw shucks nature.
He's a meat and potatoes kind of guy, to quote Edzo and Doc from NHL. Just looking for a meat and potatoes kind of shift, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man, Phil. Well, then that was not to just gush on Phil, but Phil has looked pretty good.
I think it's fair to say that he's been the most consistent and best looking player throughout most of that time frame. I mean, obviously, like, it's really hard to count anything from that Montreal game because it was just bad. But but the other games, I mean, he basically, he had the game winning shootout goal in the first game against Washington. He had the game winning goal on the power play against Anaheim, and then contributed another power play marker against Colorado.
Yeah. So. Well, and fun fact, I don't know if you've noticed this, but both of his goals have been 5 whole snipes.
Yeah, it's been really impressive. Just what he's kind of decided to do with the puck, particularly on the power play.
Well, and he's looked dangerous too. Like, it's not just the timely chip in like that he's happened to score. Like, every time he picks the puck up, he's looking dangerous with it. He's pushed a couple wide. He's had some good shots. This is the Phil Kessel that I've wanted to see, for that we saw at the end of the regular season last year, and that we saw in the playoffs, and that, like, I just hope that he continues to just do Phil Kessel things on the ice for the Penguins.
Yeah, for sure. Touching on the power play just a little bit more, he's not ever going to be Alex Ovechkin or Steven Stamkos that just...
But he did have a good one-timer. I saw that.
I couldn't believe that. That was awesome.
I thought Detroit was going to fall into Canada because his stick was going to just shatter the earth. Yes. But, like, I saw it, and his stick on that shot looked like an arrow twine, like, just bending, you know? But it was a good shot, and it sounded like it had some chutzpah on it.
Yeah, actually, I'm wondering, I honestly am curious to know if maybe he is using a little bit of a stiffer stick, like maybe even just on the power play.
I don't know. And it's because, just simply because the Pens have been running that 1-3-1, that I don't know that he's actually going to use it, because, like, he's going to find himself in far more opportunities. It, like, the goals that he has scored on the power play than he is in that one-timer, either from the left half wall or even, like, the closer to the point.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get into that in just a couple more minutes, I think.
Okay. Well, we could just talk about it now if you want.
And that's fine. Like, I mean, unless you have anything else that you want to weigh in on.
I mean, the discipline is a huge factor. I think... What I saw from the Washington, really the first 3 games, was the Pens playing up-tempo hockey. I think they played the games that they wanted to play. They executed well. I think the discipline. I took the lack of discipline there as an early season. We're figuring this out. Chris Kunitz summed it up well. I mean, this was in reference to the Montreal game, but he said, "Listen, if you're using your stick to check somebody, that means that your feet have let you down and you're already out of position." And so, what that tells me is that the message that Sullivan is preaching to the Penguins right now is that you're taking the body and you're using a stick lift only when you're in position to make that and actually strip the puck away from them rather than to stick check them. And so those first 3 games, I saw the first 3 games. I mean, I think the Colorado loss is not I don't look at that and say like I have this huge disappointment. I think, I mean, yeah, is it disappointing to end it seeing the goofy grin of Gabe Landeskog as he, like, takes the biggest whiff of all time and, like, barely tips the puck into the net. Yeah, like, I mean, he scored the goal. It's what counts. They got the 2 points. But I don't think, like, to me, that was an exciting hockey game, right? Like, that's what I want to see the NHL move toward. Jared Bednar has the Avalanche doing is to me a copycat of what the Pens are doing. And that's good. Like, that's good for the league.
It's very good.
It was exciting. I mean, It was back and forth action. I mean, I've never seen Fedor Tuten move as much as I did during that game. Yeah. I didn't realize that he was capable of that, but I think they played a good game. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'd like to see Tuten do that, like in game 75, move that well. But
right.
Yeah, no, I agree. Kudos to the Avalanche. That was a fantastic game, and I'm really excited about that team with Jared Bednar as the coach. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's, as you said, that's the way that hockey ought to be played. And in some ways, it's like they just, you know, they do what the Pens do. But I think in a sense, they can, as a whole team, they might even be able to do it a little bit faster if they can, can get all their ducks in a row. In a sense.
Well, that's because, like, their big pieces, aside from Jerome Iginla, are not 30. They're all 24 to 25. Or in the case of Nathan MacKinnon, 22. You know,
I think he's still 21.
Is he? Good Lord, he's unreal.
Yeah.
He is, he is a thick young man. I don't know if you saw him at the World Cup, but the dude looked like a sausage in ice skates. Like, and I don't mean that in a derogatory, like, I don't mean that, like, to make fun of him. He just looks like he has, like, the neck muscles on him. Like, he kind of is like a starfish, like Patrick Starr. That he just kind of comes to a point at the top of his head. I don't want to play against that. Like, I'm glad that we don't have to play that six games a year.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, I think they're still definitely going to have a tough road to hoe just because they play in what's probably the best division in hockey. But, I would love to see that team in the playoffs.
Listen, I mean, they play – you saw what the Pens have done to these bigger and heavier teams. That's all the teams that are in the Western Conference. They're all trying to be the copycat Bruins of 2011 and the Kings of the past 5 years. The Pens skated circles around Anaheim during that game.
Oh, man, that team is in trouble.
Oh, Lord, yes, they are. But, like, I want to see Colorado continue. I mean, I like the Avalanche. I was a big Nordiques fan. When the Nordiques were around, and I still want to see Quebec get the Nordiques franchise back because I think that would be sick. But I really love the youth of Colorado. I love the speed that they're playing with. I mean, Matt Duchene and Nathan MacKinnon are unbelievable talents. Gabe Landeskog is a very fine hockey player. Like, I want to see those guys succeed. I do. And I'm glad that they're doing it. Excuse me, not... as much as it pains me to say this, not with Patrick Waugh behind that bench.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, well, they were saying, well, I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Jared Bednar, so he won the last 9 games of the AHL playoffs because he was the coach of the Lake Erie Monsters, Columbus's farm team.
Right.
So he won the last 9 games of the AHL playoffs straight. And then the Avalanche went 6-0 in the preseason.
Right.
Which is just, not that it matters, but, like, that's just shocking.
Yeah.
And then he won the first 2 games of the regular season with the Avalanche. So, like, that's 17 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a heck of a coach. Let's not, I mean, he's the Mike Sullivan breed of coaches.
Yeah, definitely so. Definitely, you know, I don't know how much he kind of was influenced or is a disciple of, like, the Tortorella kind of coaching tree in the way that Sullivan is, but certainly I think he probably picked up some of the actually redeemable qualities of Tortorella, but is also actually an innovative coach that can that can do things that are different.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems like he's not part of the nucleus of caring is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I don't think he's all that keen on shot blocking and the size of a man's heart.
Right.
And tears in the locker room.
I'm done. I'm over it. So let me say this about the Montreal game. I think the Pens were set up for a disaster. Montreal was the worst. M&T Bell Center is awful. I stream the games because I don't have cable because I'm that guy. And
happens to the best of us.
Yeah, so the only feed that I could get was the TSN French feed, and it was not good. Like, it was just I just felt slimy at the end of it. But I think if there's any takeaways from that game, it's that we remember that the Penguins are humans, like they can lose, and that, like, you know, they're number one, they're not going to win all 82 games, but they also actually have to work for their points. I mean, I thought Montreal came out and they played a good, just a solid game, like from start to finish. I mean, anytime you score a goal 52 seconds into a game, you're looking all right. But I mean, they did not look like a Michel Therrien coach team that was sluggish and just was going to stop up the middle, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, admittedly, as much as I love to pan Therrien and Marc Bergevin, like, you know, there are some okay pieces on that team. You know, I really like Alex Galchenyuk and Brandon Gallagher, although obviously, mm-hmm. you know, after Gallagher's hit on Letang, you're kind of reminded of, like, why a lot of people don't like him. But
right.
but to me, I think Gallagher kind of is shaping up a little bit like he could be, like, the next Brad Marchand in a sense.
Yeah. No.
A guy that's a little bit of a punk, but, you know, but, man, he can play when he just settles down and just plays the game.
Yeah, we'll also talk about Brad Marchand, 5-point night to open up the season.
Yeah, that was crazy.
But I think is a takeaway from that game. I think, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't need to start. I know that he's a, you know, Sorel Quebec native, and that's but does he need to start against Colorado? Probably not. Like, yeah,
I mean, that's one of those situations where if you had Matt Murray, there's no way that Fleury would have played both games. I mean,
right.
Obviously, right. I think they're going to pretty much alternate games anyway. But even with that, I think it's like, you know, kind of the old coaching wisdom is your starter will play the home game and then your backup will play the road game. But then right. it's like, you know, when your backup is kind of as irrelevant and new to the team as Mike Condon is,
right,
then I think, you know, you kind of just step out of the way whenever
the
starter's like, no, I want to play in front of my hometown. So
yeah, well, and you know, maybe there might be one of those healthy things where the Pens are just getting Fleury reps if they're going to trade him. I mean, that might be, I don't know that that's going to happen, but it fits the narrative. Some people are saying it. I figure we might as well mention it.
No, absolutely. And, it, you know, I guess just to kind of touch briefly on that, it sounds like Matt Murray is going to formally rejoin the team starting on Thursday, as well as Sid, allegedly. So
there you go.
You know, so sounds like maybe, you know, both of those guys could be back sooner rather than later, as well as both Sheary, who took that bad stick to the face, to the eye.
Oh, that was not a...
Yeah.
Like, go home, Alex Radulov.
Yeah. I don't know. At some point, I have to wonder, like, if the NHL, and I know the answer to this, but I wonder if the NHL will actually, like, start to get serious about stick infractions like that. You know,
because... I doubt it.
Because he literally could have, like, destroyed Sheary's eye and, like, ended his career.
Right. They're not going to. Like, you know that. I know that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So just move on and... He got another two games against them this year. Whatever, yeah. we'll beat them.
That's the plan.
So, listen, I know we had typed this out, but I want to spend as much time as we can looking at this power play that the Pens were running. And I know, so for those of you that don't know, so, you know, Andrew and I try to come up with intelligible things to say before the night that we do this so that the podcast doesn't actually suck. And has a little bit of substance to it. And so, you know, one of the things that we wanted to talk about was this new power play that the Pens seem to be running this year, which there's a little bit of drama coming into that. But through the first two games, looked great. Through the last two games, it has not looked great. So I'm curious to see kind of where this goes. But for those of you that don't know, the Pens have started running a power play this year called a 1-3-1. And it features, generally speaking, a defenseman at the blue line, manning the point. And then you've got three people kind of across the middle of the offensive zone, one on the left half wall, one on the right half wall, and a guy kind of roaming the high slot. And then you've got a net front presence. And so you've got 1-3-1 in a stack. And there's all sorts of variations that you can use through that. But it seems to be the thing that the Pens have been going back to since the last half of the preseason this year, once they started getting people back from the World Cup. So before when it's working well, Andrew, what's good about this 1-3-1?
Well, it basically, you know, and I think by and large, when they've been able to actually get set up and not taken a penalty within like 5 seconds of going on the power play,
gosh,
they have been able to get it set up. But the whole kind of point is that you have this opportunity that no matter where you are on the ice, you can kind of form a passing triangle, either with the player in the high slot or with the point man or with the guy on the half wall. And kind of the whole point is that the play will run through those half wall players, mm-hmm. which, you know, speaking of the Pens' first power play unit, which is kind of the one that this is a tailor-made system for. So you have Phil Kessel on the left half wall as a right-handed shot, and then you have Malkin on the right half wall as a left-handed shot. And, you know, so basically, you know, what we've seen is that, you know, Phil Kessel has 2 power play goals so far.
Right.
You know, so basically he's been able to kind of make the most of that and either make a pass or create space plays and take mm-hmm. the ice that's available and just put the puck on net. And one of the things that has been working really well, as we kind of alluded to earlier, is Kessel taking a little bit off of his shot and going for that like 5-hole shot, as we've seen, and right. really like keeping the puck low to the ice. Either like, I think the one goal, he literally didn't even lift the puck at all. Like he just literally slid it through. I think it was in the Anaheim game, and he slid it through Bernier's legs just like before he had a chance to get down. But so what that does is that creates an opportunity that allows the Penguins to crash for a rebound as well.
Right.
Which is really important.
Yeah, and here's what's so dangerous about if you're not a hockey thinker, breaking it down like this, when you've got a guy like Phil Kessel who has an unbelievable shot, and you've got a guy like Malkin who has an unbelievable shot playing on the opposite side of the ice, what you cannot do as the penalty killer is you can't overload one side. So what teams will do is if they know that there's a weaker side on the attacking team's power play, what they'll do is load up on the opposite side and then force that player. It's almost like an isolation play in basketball, if you're familiar at all with that. Forcing that one player to handle the puck and make the decisions. And so with the 1-3-1, you've got essentially you're allowing the Pens' top 5 players to do what they do best, is what it comes down to. So with Phil Kessel, we've seen him do it twice. He walks out when Phil Kessel does the little button hook out of the half boards. It is a scary thing for other teams because like he can get that puck off so, and we saw this in the Washington shootout goal. I mean, he's 4 feet from the net, and he puts the puck at about 90 miles an hour top shelf, elevates it, you know, 4 feet in about 4 feet, which is a decent shot moving at full speed. I mean, that's ridiculous. And I think Evgeny Malkin has one of the most underrated slap shots, one timers in the NHL. I mean, we've seen him do this time and time and time again from that right circle, just having somebody tee it up for him and him putting it short side on that goaltender or going, just blowing it through one of the goaltender's 6 holes. And then you've got Patrick Hornquist down low, just taking a beating and absorbing whatever checks and attention the last defenseman and the goaltender are going to give him. You've got Chris Letang being deceptive and making passes from the point, and you've got Crosby just roaming and doing whatever he pleases and just letting him do his thing. Yeah. And so, in theory, this 1-3-1 takes the best out of each of the Pens' best offensive players and just lets them do what they can do in a controlled zone situation. And so, in theory, it makes perfect sense for the Penguins to run this setup. So the question is, and Mike Sullivan was not the first coach to invent this.
Yeah. Well, and I probably, you know, the way that I've worded this and the way that I've seen it worded by other people who have talked about this in the past is that it might be a little bit misleading. I guess I'll just leave it that way. But so the guy who quite literally wrote the book on this system, if not actually developed the system in the first place, is familiar to Penguins fans. It's actually a system developed by former coach Mike Johnston, which it just kind of boggles. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I should have paused for dramatic effect.
Yeah, it's okay. We can do it. We can add it in post or something.
Yeah. But so yeah, you know, this is actually something that Mike Johnston developed, and he literally wrote a book on it, or at least it's part of a book that he wrote called Hockey Plays and Strategies. And you know, I'll put it this way: he never used it, obviously, while he was in Pittsburgh, because we haven't seen this in Pittsburgh since, well, you know, ever. You know, and so I guess the question as to why Mike Johnston wouldn't have used it, I guess there's a couple of ways that you could look at it. On one hand, you do want both of those half wall players to be able to open up for a one-time shot, and with the exception of Phil in the Montreal game, we've literally never seen him take a one-time shot ever.
Right. Or we have, and he's whiffed on it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a combination of using, you know, so like in hockey and with the sticks and equipment, there's different kinds of grades of stiffness and flex. And one of the things that makes Kessel's shot that Mike was talking about earlier so lethal is that he uses an extremely flexible and whippy kind of stick. But what that means is that it makes it really hard to take a one-time shot because there's just no rigidity to that stick.
Right. And so what ends up happening with that, for those that don't know, is that when that stick bends, you have to put a certain amount of pressure for it, allow a certain amount of pressure off of it to release at the right point. Because if you don't do that, and you put too much pressure on it, it's going to spray the puck to the left or to the right.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's it flexes, and it's the stick is literally designed to bend in a certain way, mm-hmm. so that the release point is like it's controllable, so that you can load up on it. It's almost like putting a spring into action, and like compressing it and then letting it explode in a very controlled and repeatable fashion.
Yeah. You know, and so what we've seen, though, and I think this has been a clever kind of modification by either by Phil or by Sullivan as a coach, is that they're not asking Phil to take that one-time shot.
Right.
In fact, basically, if it comes to him, he is always kind of slowing that play back down and kind of looking for his lane. And if he can't find it, then, you know, again, he can just kind of go into that passing triangle and either dish to the point to Letang or pass into the center, which, you know, currently until Sid gets back has been occupied by Nick Bonino. And you know, with all due respect to Bonino, I think the power play is just going to really sink when Crosby actually gets in there.
Right. And one thing I've noticed that we didn't talk about this is that they've been using that wraparound behind the net play to get the puck to Malkin on the far side wall to actually some good results. Like, it's not been just the pressure relief, okay, we just need to get it around and I'm just gonna, you know, hamstring this puck around the boards and hopefully somebody picks it up. But it seems like it's been and this has been different than in recent years, that if there's not a pass back to the point because Letang is covered, and there's not a pass to the center of the ice, instead of just like trying to walk in and shoot it, the Pens are resetting that play and like throwing the puck around the boards. Geno stays on the half wall, or one of those guys that's in the slot pops out and takes it and just resets the play. And I think like that's one of those things that makes this 1-3-1 so wonderful when it's run properly, is that that it is a possession monster when it's done the right way.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's perfect for a team like the Penguins.
No, absolutely. I mean, you basically kind of one of the greatest strengths about it is that you basically can't stop the flow of the puck as long as the team on the power play continues to move it.
Yeah.
You know, if you hold on to it too long, if any one player holds on to it too long, you can run into problems. But basically, you know, you can literally pass around any conventional penalty killing strategy.
Right.
You know, and one thing that I think the Pens have been doing a good job with the power play has been when they do make those like down low kind of transitions, like Patrick Hornquist and Bonino have done a really good job of getting down there and making sure to force the play through.
Right.
Which I think has been critically important. Because, I would say maybe to this point, we are still seeing teams maybe shade a little bit towards Malkin's side.
Right.
As much as anything, they're probably just expecting, like, the conventional kind of, sort of like two players down low system that the Pens have used in the past with Gino or Sid setting up on the right half wall, and maybe they just kind of haven't adapted to that yet. And that's why they're shading, especially, because Phil has kind of made them look silly a couple times so far. But with that said, the Pens have been able to move the puck pretty much where they want when they've had the power play and they've gotten it set up.
Well, and a key to that is that the players that are on the perimeter of the zone, which is Kessel, Malkin, and Letang, are all very deceptive with the puck, right? Like, they don't panic, they don't throw it away. They oftentimes, unless Gino's going into enigmatic Russian mode, don't just throw the puck meaninglessly across the ice. Like, so far, they've been making really good, smart decisions with the puck. Yeah. And when they continue to do that, even if they're not necessarily generating a shot every 10 seconds, it's still like, there were a couple times against Anaheim that I thought the penalty killers were just going to collapse because they were sick of trying to move like that high cycle, that high alternating cycle that they use to try and kill the penalties and disrupt that rhythm. Like, I thought those guys were just going to collapse because of that. That's what happens when this 1-3-1 goes according to plan. But, and here's the big but, is that we've said all of this is predicated on gaining the zone and actually getting set up. And I think, so I have an interesting theory that I've heard a couple people allude to, but I want to talk about it now, in that I think one of the woes to the Penguins' power play is that I think fundamentally it goes against what their team identity is. So, there was that great Inside the Room piece from last February on, like, forging an identity as, a speed team, a transition team, a counterattack team, all of that stuff, which is true in exactly what the way the Penguins played it. When you think about if that's what the team is built on team speed, attacking in waves, attacking by platoon, and just generally making it hard to play against, there's one situation in every hockey game that is the antithesis of what that team identity is. And it is on the intro to the zone on the power play. Because the other team knows exactly what's going to happen, and they're very capable of just backing up and playing just a four-man wall against on that blue line, or having one quote-unquote four-checker and having three guys back and forcing the team to either make an ill-advised carry or a dump in. And so it frustrates me to no end to see the Pens continue to use this, 30-foot drop pass to enter the zone, because when Chris Letang mysteriously at center ice decides to start skating backwards, guess what he's going to do? Oh, it's because of getting Malkin or Phil Kessel is also trailing him up the ice, and he's going to drop. Oh, look, he dropped the puck to them again.
Yeah.
And it is so frustrating for me to watch. I would much rather them, to me, it almost seems like it would be a better fit for the Pens to start all five guys behind, in the trapezoid behind the net, and just let them skate out together. Fly and just try to style. Yeah, honestly, that would be more entertaining to me. Well, because at least you wouldn't even know what they're going to get. Hey, Mike Sullivan, listen, I have an idea. Rick Tockett, let's have lunch, because I think I might be onto something here. But, oh, God, it kills me to watch them stack three on the blue line and have Chris Letang do the fake carry to the red and then just drop it to Malkin or Kessel. It makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Like, that's become my least favorite thing about the power play. At one point, I feel like when Sullivan kind of first took over the Penguins, that was something that he implemented. And for a little while, several months, I think it worked perfectly fine. It allowed that trailing player to just gain all that speed and you know, and depending on who the trailing player is, I mean, if it's a player of Letang or Kessel, or I mean, even Malkin, although Malkin's maybe not quite as fast as those guys, you know, if you get those guys running with like a full head of steam, then I don't really care if you are stacking all of your, all four of your guys at the blue line. Like, that guy's probably going to get in the zone.
Yeah.
But what we've seen now is that, A, I don't think the Pens executed as well. Like, I don't think they necessarily literally come like 100% full bore through the neutral zone after they make that, that drop pass. And secondly, teams have seen it and they know it.
Right.
And, you know, I think even by the end of the playoffs, I think last year we saw that it was not really having the same impact anymore.
No, it wasn't.
That, that teams were able to just kind of do something a little bit different, or just, you know, be more prepared for it in any way. And so I do feel like that is an inefficiency on this power play. As, and also another thing is that sometimes when you're configured in the way that you are, so, I mean, you're basically making a big kind of, you know, T or X or whatever you want to call it, like on, like throughout the entire offensive zone. And I don't know if that necessarily is the best configuration for the Penguins either. You know, I think it'll be interesting when Crosby actually does get in the lineup and to see where he goes. Because, like, he's just so great when he's kind of playing down lower in the zone.
Right. Well, would it be unheard of to have whoever's playing in that kind of net front role, whether it's Hornquist or Kunitz, would it be interesting to see them play kind of that row, like that rover that's going up and down in the slot, and then just to plant Crosby at that the right-hand goalpost and say, let Sid do that, let him do those things where he can, I mean, I would not be surprised to see that happen.
No, I completely agree, and I think that's once again kind of going to be one of those inefficiencies that we see with the power play now that could be rectified when Sid gets in there, because I think right now, like, the net front guy and the high slot guy have to be able to just like skate the pants off of the penalty killers that they're playing against. Because that's how you're able to kind of maintain that possession after a shot, if there's a rebound or whatever the case may be. Because if those guys aren't good skaters, then you do open up a lot of like kind of passing exit lanes that a team can use to exploit the zone. Because obviously, when you just have one guy back on the point, like, you're not able to cover a whole lot of ground, especially if that guy happened to be like the one taking the shot or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when Sid gets back, you know, and just see if they can kind of rotate around and make something happen. But, you know, I mean, I'm very intrigued by this system overall.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and it's, what I don't want to do is, like, it's very clearly designed with that top unit in mind, but the bottom unit has also looked good. Like,
Let's don't
go to sleep on guys like Trevor Daley, who he had an absolute bomb of a shot.
In that Colorado game. That was a great shot.
And, it was.
You know, and I think there's something to be said for, you know, sometimes I think it is easy to forget. Like, trust me, I am the biggest Chris Letang fan out there. Like, don't get me wrong. But there are certain, like, he's not a natural, like, power play point man, I would say.
No, he's not.
You know, I think, in fact, so once upon a time, before the Penguins even acquired Phil Kessel, they Pensburg actually wrote an article about the 1-3-1 power play. And they talked about kind of deploying Letang in the role that Phil Kessel plays as that left half wall player. And it's like, I almost feel like he would be more comfortable there, where he could kind of just grip it and rip it, than maybe being that guy that has to walk the point and make some of that happen. Whereas I think Daley is a guy who is kind of a natural power play shooter as a defenseman.
Right. Well, I mean, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, and I think obviously that second unit will get even better when Bonino is able to go back to that unit instead of playing on the top one.
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't think the Pens have had a true number one, like, power play guy since Paul Coffey. Yeah. I mean, like much. That's not true. Sergei Gonchar was really good. Well, that's who I meant to say. But
well, coffee works too, though.
Both those guys are really good. But my point is that those guys had just such a commanding shot that, like, and this is not to diminish Chris Letang. I think the way that he's been floating wristers at about 10 inches off the ice, just those kind of lasers that are just, you know, hitting the top of the pads and letting the guys that are down low just go to work. Like, that is deceptively good in the fact that he doesn't, you know, he's in the top 10 on defensemen of the league in terms of, like, shooting for, like getting the puck through with that wrist shot.
Yeah.
Undersell that.
Yeah. Speaking of Jesse Marshall, once again, that was a project that he actually did last year. And he showed that that Letang was, I think, like second or third best in the entire league. So
yeah. So that narrative of Chris Letang, you know, gets his shots blocked is dumb. But I don't want to undersell that.
Right.
But I also, like, there was a much different look on the penalty killers' faces when Sergei Gonchar would wind up for a one-timer than when Chris Letang grips the puck to float a wrister in.
Yeah, it's a different way of playing, you know, and kind of attacking your opponent's weaknesses. You know, I think there's certainly a reason, you know, I mean, there's a reason why Letang's shot is effective and why he has been becoming a better goal scorer, but it's not something that's going to strike fear in, you know, in the hearts and minds of an opponent, as when you see a guy just crank up like a 106 mile an hour slap shot and put it right on net, exactly where he wants it.
Right. Well, and that's, I think that goes to say, one of the things we haven't talked about with this power play is just that the fact is that Kessel and Malkin are the ones that are dictating the play. Like, Letang might have the puck and is distributing it, but those two guys are the ones that are dictating where the puck is going and where the pressure is coming from. And I think that's one of those, I think it's a really brilliant thing because, like, if you look at the other teams that utilize a 1-3-1, Washington does it, and the power play goes through Nick Backstrom on the right half wall, which is where Malkin is playing. You look at Philly that uses it, and Claude Giroux does the same thing, but from the left half wall.
Right.
Those power plays are perennially in the top five in the league. Yeah. And it's not because they have like this outrageous, like just bed of talent. I mean, what Washington does, but
But I mean, I would say that both of those teams have very talented players, but
those
teams have talent that's commensurate with what the Penguins have as well.
Right, exactly. And so I think they're using their talent in the right way, right? Because like Claude Giroux, like as much as I like don't want to celebrate him, period.
ever, under any circumstances.
Right, but I have to give him credit that he is a unreal power play specialist.
Yeah.
Like, he is a great forward when it comes to distributing the puck, shooting the right way, taking the right shots. Like, it's good. And Nick Backstrom, I mean, like, listen, man, there's been about 3 years in a row where literally everybody knows what the Capitals power play is going to do. Like, you could be casual fan sitting and buying your, you know, $15 a beer souvenir beer at the lower bowl in the paint can. And you know what the Capitals' power play is going to do, but yet they're above 25% every year because they just do it so well.
Mm-hmm.
And partially that's because as long as you have like a guy the caliber of Nick Backstrom who can distribute the puck, and a guy the caliber of Alex Ovechkin who can just jackhammer the puck into the net, seemingly lit from nothing at all, you're going to have a good power play. And I think that the Pens have that talent, but it's a different type of talent.
Right.
Because, I mean, Phil Kessel, like, the thing that's going to make him good is that when he walks off a wall and just rings one in off the post. The thing that's going to make Malkin good is when he's able to walk a little bit, make a nice dish and receive it and have it come back as a one-timer. Like, that's what I want to see. What makes Chris Letang good is not that he has the scary slap shot, but that he's deceptive with his skating, can draw a penalty like a penalty killer, and then distribute a puck to Malkin or Kessel.
Yeah,
that's what's going to make it good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think you know, and so far, you know, once again, and obviously it, I feel like this is a little bit clouded by like the Montreal game when, you know, once again, the team was, well, supposedly 0-for-8. And like, right. I didn't even see like half of those power plays be called or like happen because like they ended literally the second the puck was dropped.
Right.
You know, but nonetheless, it, you know, it is encouraging. And I guess just kind of like one of the last things that I think I want to touch on is this notion that the Penguins, I think, are being smart in how they're executing it, and they are tailoring it to the personnel that they have on the ice.
Sure.
You know, and I think one of the ways that we have seen that, once again, is like if you look at Kessel's goals, is that like he's, you know, he's purposely kind of not necessarily, I mean, I wouldn't say he's not trying to score, but he's just trying to create chaos in front of the crease.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, and then Patrick Hornquist and Nick Bonino can get in there and do what they do really well, which is score
right,
gritty goals.
Right. Well, listen, it's one of those things that like when you play tennis, one of the biggest like kind of misnomers about tennis and in a game like golf as well, or billiards, is that like for the biggest difference between people who are good at those games and people who are not good at those games is how hard they try to make contact with the ball in whatever case it is. So like
this is me golfing last week or
with tennis, like one of the biggest things that you have to learn is that not every shot, like not every ball that you hit has to be at 100%, because if you do, you're just gonna tire yourself out. And the same thing with golf, in theory, not every swing that you take needs to be or should be a 100% swing. And in the same way, the goals that we've seen from Phil Kessel are not the goals where he's come in like flying down the right wing and just rip up a shot off the far post. They've been, I mean, one was basically a pass into the net, and the other one was 2 inches off the ground at about 40% of what Phil Kessel was capable of shooting at.
Yeah.
And I think that like that wisdom, that situational knowledge to recognize that and say, listen, if I'm putting these five like right on the five hole, even if this goaltender makes the save, I know that Patrick Hornquist is going to come in here with a sledgehammer and try to get that puck loose or chip it in the net. And that, like, Nick Bonino is coming in as a second wave, and then Kessel's going to get in there. I mean, that is how the Penguins ended the series against Washington. It was a sneaky little shot, a smart shot that created a rebound that Nick Bonino popped in the net.
Yep,
and they keep doing that. It doesn't matter how that puck gets in the net, as long as it gets in there, a goal is a goal.
Yeah.
And so if they can, and like think about it, man. If you are the Penguins and you know that you have this bevy of talent on the power play, if you can use that time to generate the kind of pressure that they have been with as little effort as they have been, like it's not like they're out there and like, you know, skating, you know, circles around the whole power play unit is rotating, like. They've been letting the puck do the work. So, like, let the puck continue to do the work. Take the smart shots and take the plays that are in front of you, as opposed to what we've seen the Penguins in years past try to make the perfect passes and set up the highlight reel goals because they're not letting the system work for them.
Right, exactly. And you know, I think just kind of last point on that is that in so doing, I also think they've been a little bit smarter with the puck. I mean, you know, if you're moving the puck in this system, like you're going to be able to continue to move the puck.
Right.
And the other thing is that they're not shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, outside of like the penalties and stuff.
Right.
They're not shooting themselves in the foot by taking these ridiculous like one-time slap shots that are nowhere near the net and end up rimming around and going out of the zone. And
right.
Basically clearing the puck right. on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been, to me, that's like one of the most exciting things about this system.
Well, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but Malkin's one-timers have all come inside of the circle.
Yeah. Like he'll purposely drop into the zone further.
Yes. So he's sliding in a little bit more towards the center of the ice so that angle is not as steep and it's not even, because like, and I mean, that's such a hard shot to make regardless, but.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would, in that case, I would rather, and I think this is, I would assume that this is what Sullivan is preaching. I would rather have the penalty killer block the shot, the initial slot because, or the initial shot, because it's further towards the inside, than have a clearer angle and have Malkin miss the net by a couple of inches and let the puck run out because Chris Letang couldn't get over to the boards.
Right.
Because if he blocks the shot, then he's out of position.
Yeah.
Like, is what it comes down to.
Exactly. And then, you know, and so an opportunistic player, which, you know, I think both Phil and Gino are, you know, they're going to be able to follow up that shot, even if right. it does get blocked. And even if they don't, then you're still going to have, you know, Sid or Hornquist kind of swooping in there as well. And that's, that's a lot to deal with if you're a any penalty kill.
I mean, realistically, you've got, if you're a penalty kill, you've got one opportunity to, like, if the Penguins are taking a shot, you have one opportunity to clear it. And if you don't, the puck's probably going to end up in the back of the net or with a good scoring chance, which is what we saw Phil do in against Anaheim, right? Yeah. I think it was Anaheim. The puck squirts out behind the net. Hornquist puts the pressure on, wins the battle. Phil picks the puck up and slides it in the crease. Like, and that's the kind of stuff that either, like, and don't forget that was generated off of a good shot, I think, by Malkin on the net. Yeah. So you have that shot generated. Puck doesn't get cleared right away. Hornquist wins the battle, and you've got Phil Kessel scoring the goal. I mean, I think that's the way that power play is going to have to get it done this year, as opposed to, you know, setting up for the one-timers that the goalie can't, like, just trying to blast it through his chest or something like that. Like, that's not going to work. There's too many teams that are too, like, I heard Ian Cole say this. It was after the Colorado game. Every team is a shot blocking team. Like, you know, like, there's nobody out there that's just going to try to get the sticks on it. Like, every team is throwing out and selling out for every shot that they can, especially on the penalty kill. That's just kind of the kind of league that we're in right now. Watching the Pens do that and go after that, I think they're playing a little bit smarter with that. They stopped taking penalties. I mean, even that second unit, like, I mean, let's give Scott Wilson and Connor Sheary a little bit of credit on that. Like, they've looked good on that unit. They've been shifty. They've been taking good shots. And when you have Trevor Daley, like, just pounding them in from the point like that, that's a good look. That's a good look for that team.
Absolutely. I'm excited to, I'm excited to see where, like, you know, how everything shapes up once we truly get back to sort of full personnel.
Right.
With Sid back in the lineup, hopefully Letang, you know, if he does miss a couple games or whatever, but, you know, hopefully he'll be back in the lineup soon as well. And, you know, we can really, really see what this unit can do.
Yeah, it'll be good. So we'll hopefully have this up and ready before the game on Thursday. And everybody can listen to it and tell us how wrong we are after Thursday night.
Yep.
But that said, is there anything else that we need to hit on tonight? I know we wanted to try to keep it a little bit not 2 hours long.
Yeah. No, the only other thing that I guess I was going to say is that I think I don't know if it'll be tomorrow. It might get pushed into, like, the weekend, but, you know, I am going to be applying for the Apple iTunes podcast registry.
There you go.
So very soon the podcast will come to you instead of you having to go to the podcast. Those of you who have been tuning in and listening, you know, I can't thank you enough, and hopefully this will make it a little bit easier on you.
Well, I do want to continue to advocate for one of the ways that you can continue to follow this is to subscribe on SoundCloud. That will notify you. I've been using SoundCloud a lot more recently, and I like it. There's some really good stuff on there, and it's helpful.
It's a cool site.
But I'm excited to get on that Apple iTunes registry, and we'll be big time in it, man.
That's it.
Right on. Okay, well, any other closing thoughts from you there, Andrew?
Well, all I gotta say is, please cut it out with the penalties, Penguins. That's all I got.
Well, yes. I don't know that there's anything else that needs to be said.
And let's get back to business as usual.
Hey, I'm going to repeat the Mike Sullivan mantra. Just play. Like, I mean, yeah, you're gonna take some penalties every game. We know that. But just play. Like, come on, boys.
Yep. I mean, you know, otherwise, I really don't have any real complaints or any critiques necessarily at this time. I think it's, they just got to do that. And I think the goal differential will start to change a little bit.
Yeah. It'll, well, I mean, and realistically, like, I mean, they've played three one-goal games,
yeah.
And then had just laid an egg in Montreal.
Yeah.
Which is a weird, it's a little bit weird to say that the Pens have a negative one goal differential at this point. No, negative two, sorry.
Negative two, yeah. Sorry.
That's a lot. That's a little weird to think, but.
Well, it is. But by and large, the process has been there. I mean, there's still an above 50% possession team. I think, you know, Anaheim and Montreal, they really dominated those games. And I think the other games, like, I mean, Washington is a good possession team, and Colorado, I think, is going to be dramatically improved on that front, just because you can't possibly be worse than when Patrick Waugh is your coach.
That's true. That's true.
So, you know, with all of that said, you know, I think the Pens are holding their own. They've played some decent teams. You know, we'll see what happens next.
Okay. Well, I think that is then it for the Reggie's House podcast. Again, my name is Mike Swanson. You can find me on Twitter at I am Mike Swanson.
Yep. And I am Andrew Roman, and I am at Andrew Roman on Twitter. You know, once again, thanks to everybody who's been listening. You know, like and share with your friends. We like that stuff.
We do. We do like it a whole lot. Well, again, thanks for listening, guys, and we are done for this week. So with that said, let's go, Pens.
Go, Pens.